Hello, welcome again to Comic Con Source. Tonight we'll be talking about the second half of introducing JT as an avid comic reader to reading some manga, introducing a comic reader to manga. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink.
This means you and I are having enemies now.
So, like I said, we gave JT some reading assignments. This is the second half of the reading assignments. JT, how has your excellent adventures been going?
Pretty good. These ones, I have more or less the same opinions slash criticisms about them somewhat. I mean, it varies a little bit, but it's more or less the same thing. I enjoyed them all across the board. I enjoyed the art and the copious amounts of world building that you get at least in the first two.
But
other than that, it's not as a varied journey as what I had with the first four titles.
Well, let's talk about the first two, the first one here. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, the first one I looked at was Tsukumichi Moonlit Fantasy. I forget if it was the first time you told me about this. It was something else entirely. It was like Disrespected in Another World or something like that.
Yes, it's this is an interesting one because this one's actually based off of a light novel. This is interesting because light novels are a big component of manga production in Japan and also anime production in Japan. And we got to sort of see both facets of production where we have the author-artist, triple threat. Like in the last episode, we had Hajime no Ippo, which was created by an author-artist combo guy. And, you know, we had other creations that were created by a sole author artist, and here we're having like creations that were made like which were just written stories, you know, written word stories created as light novels, and then a couple years later then adapted into a manga Moonlit Fantasy. So it's kind of interesting seeing what your take is on this.
Yeah, and that's something I kind of found fascinating, too, was, like, how, I mean, just tangent off to the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a second, in this world where everything's kind of made to be multimedia nowadays because of the wild success of Marvel movies, that I think is kind of fascinating because I think that certainly played a part in evolving, you know, the artistic medium of manga and anime. Like, when I'm looking at the wiki here, like, you know, this novel series started first, which was written by Kei Azumi. Then the light novel series came like a year after that. A couple years after that was the actual manga adaptation. And then just this year was the first 12 episode season of the anime adaptation. So it's, and I think some about Japan, when you look at stuff like collectibles, you have novels, light novels, manga, anime, and all that, they're already kind of geared towards this. So it was probably an easier transition, I think, into this mindset of spreading it out and adapting it as many different forms of media as possible to kind of, you know, get the message out there. So Moonlit Fantasy, I really enjoyed this first one. The art, first of all, just it's like some of my favorite comic book artists here, like guys like Jim Lee, Mark Bagley, that I've talked about on the show before, because it just has this nice, solid, kind of polished, well put together feel. Like it's not too loose like the art that I saw in Bastard, and it's not so detailed as what I said with Hajime no Ippo. But overall, the thing, again, that I loved in this first one was the story of, it's one of those things. It's like how He-Man, you get right into He-Man with the very first episode, and we're talking the original cartoon, not any modern day adaptations that the internet has lost their shit about. Where you're dropped into the story, Prince Adam is He-Man, Cringer is Battle Cat, Skeletor's an asshole. And I kind of like how they dropped Masumi Makoto. Makoto's, you know, the son of these two heroes from this alternate world that, you know, came to our Earth, and they had made this contract with this goddess to get them there, and then someday this goddess comes to collect, and Makoto's got, you know, a couple of younger sisters, and he's taken by one of the Shinto gods, and he's given a blessing from it, because I don't know if the god
it's a guy female. It's a guy. It's just a very pretty guy.
It's a guy. Okay, this real pretty guy. So this god gives him
Tsukuyomi is the god. It's a Shinto god. It's a fairly powerful one too.
Yeah, I thank you for saying that, because I tried and my tongue was like, yeah, no bueno. So this god, the very pretty god, gives Makoto some blessings, and he's sent to this goddess who you never see her face, but I can only imagine she looks like that bitch princess from Rising of the Shield Hero, because she takes one look at him and she's like, oh fuck no, you can go live with the beasts and the half-breeds, I don't want you anywhere near my shit. And I guess got something of a blessing from her, so he's already like ridiculously overpowered, but he doesn't quite know that yet.
Actually, Tsukuyomi gives him like the realm power. Basically, he can create realm power. All she gave him was the ability to communicate with everything except for humans.
Which, once he learns how to speak common, doesn't really...
He doesn't know how to speak... He doesn't know how to speak common at all. He knows how to hear common, but he has to communicate with, like, the
magic
writing, yeah.
What do you call it? He's got like a magic etch-a-sketch ability that he he has speech balloons, like actual speech balloons that other characters see, not just what we read.
Yes,
and you know he the metaphysical aspects of him when he runs into the dragon Shen. And
yeah, that's the realm ability. That's realm.
Yeah. I like all that. Like, he defeats Shen, and Shen had like this empty pocket dimension of it, and now it's like this ever expanding world that Shen and Koto can bring other people to live there. And also, they form I don't quite understand how the contract things works, but know that, folks, that Shen is like this uber powerful dragon who is, other people are taking advantage of Shen's legend because, you know, sending all these sacrifices to her, and she's been sleeping for like 300 years, so she has no idea what's going on. But after Makoto defeats Shen, and they form this contract.
I gotta correct Shen you. I have to correct you slightly. Makoto doesn't defeat Shen as much as Shen gets really interested in Makoto's memories and basically says, "I don't want to fight anymore. Okay. I want to form a contract with you." I
thought that was a side effect.
No, basically, okay. And also Shen is
actually
okay. I'm sorry, Red.
Suffice to say, the dragon can read Makoto's mind and view his memories like she's binging something on Netflix.
Yes, and Shen is like the second or third strongest thing in this world, depending on who you ask.
So, but because of the blessings that Makoto's got, he is a god, basically, because he's just so much more powerful than literally everybody that he comes up against with. So, yeah. And at some point, like, they do form this contract, which gives Shen the ability to assume this sea samurai girl form.
Yes.
And then my attention began to waver from the plot, because the art's really good. A little bit. I got myself back on track. And from there, you know, you meet these dwarves that start following him, and there's the lizard people and the pig people, who's actually this princess of which is one of the, yeah, the orcs, that he's like Miss Piggy, because he meets like this. Yeah, I know, that's the first thing that went into my head too. He meets, you know, this anime Miss Piggy that's like a healer, and she was being sent off to be sacrificed to Shen. And it's just all this stuff just happens one after another, and that's my main, it's not a gripe, but something I did have a little bit of problem reading through these first two volumes, is how quickly everything just keeps, he keeps getting stronger, and all this stuff keeps happening, all this stuff is adding. It's not like in Shield Hero where it happened a lot too, but it's introduced and you learn as the character learns, and because of the bullshit with the goddess who told Makoto to F off, everyone just either assumes he knows what's going on, or he has to be told by another character, and it's just, there's way too much exposition sometimes. But over the course of the stories that I read, like I read up until, you know, they go on, they start fighting this giant black spider, which becomes another sexy servant girl thing that, you know, Makoto names her Mio, and then Shen's like, I want a name too. Or Shen got named first and is now Tomo.
Yes.
And she's become obsessed with becoming like a great warrior and getting her own sword, and everyone, like, it's just like a comedy of errors. It's not like he's failing. It's just, he hasn't really lost. By the end of the story where they meet this like little girl who's being forced by this guy who claims to have her sister, and they rescue the older sister, and it looks like this girl that Makoto has had a crush on in the real world, and there's other people from Japan that are in this world, and he's trying to find them too. All in all, I definitely want to try and get back to this at some point, because I really did enjoy the story. It's just, I hope the constant leveling up kind of subsides a little bit, because it just seemed like too much too quickly.
Well, that's the thing about the Moonlit Fantasy, is they're trying this stuff 10 pounds of information in a 5-pound bag. And if you think that this is a lot of compression, the anime is even worse. Because, like, the anime tries to get, like, up to episode 12 of what's, like, chapter 60 of the manga. And that's a lot of compression, because there's an epic fight in, like, chapter 60 of the manga, and it's, a lot of stuff got compressed. A lot of stuff they had to move around to season two. Like, there's two other heroes that are summoned from the from Earth that are introduced earlier in the manga that aren't even shown in season one of the anime. And one of which, it makes the fucking spear hero from Shield Hero look like a fucking saint.
Wow. Because you know how much I like that asshole. But yeah, like, have you read this at all, Red?
Yes.
Okay. What's your opinion of the story?
It's okay to read, but it annoys the fuck out of me. I hate the fucking Japanese tropo. Oh my god, dude, I cannot possibly sleep with all these women. Oh my god, I have to protect my chastity. There is no honor in sleeping with them. You're like, fuck, just get out of the pot. Just fuck them, Jesus Christ.
What I will say is, I've read the light novel, and he does fuck them. So, that does happen. But that's neither here nor there. But in the manga, it's going to take a while. But Like I said, the
one character who's like literally all over his nutsack, and
but it's the fucking spider. It's the fucking spider, and you're the one who says don't fuck the spider.
I know. Still.
Yeah, and that was something that it made me chuckle too, and it just seemed kind of weird that like this spider gets like this little taste of his blood, and then she just gets that, you know, like look, and you see like the little hearts for eyes, and it's like, oh god, is the spider gonna try and fuck him now? And when he wakes up the next day, she's through some machinations from Tomo, formerly Shin, has formed this contract with Makoto that lets her take the form of like this, you know, servant girl who is just constantly just like, give me the D, or give her the B, because I think she still wants to suck his blood too. And it's like, I don't know how to feel about that, because it was just like, okay, I'm all for like the whole harem aspect and the girls wanting, you know, any one of the girls from like Tenchi Muyo to, you know, because they're all after Tenchi. It's just, I hadn't read something like that in a while, so it was kind of refreshing in that respect. And
how do you feel about the how do you feel about the nation building aspect?
That I found is like interesting, but also kind of puzzling, because maybe it's just my mental state and how I just expect other races to not get along, and everyone's just like getting along pretty well in like the other world, you know, because he's done the service, is like, well, we're gonna follow you, and it was like, oh dear god, is this gonna end badly or not?
Well, there's gonna be some hiccups along the way. In fact, you're gonna come up to a pretty big hiccup pretty soon. There's not gonna be a moral event horizon quite like in the next series we're gonna talk about. I do like Moonlit Fantasy. I do hear what Red's saying about the will they, won't they thing does get drawn out. Some of the fans of the series try to read into it, oh, he's not going to until he knows for sure he can't go back to his own. That's inferred and implied by the readers more so than the actual author. And that's an ass pull. That's an ass pull.
It's not just the will they, won't they thing. What I hate is they just don't do anything. Like, this person's attracted to me, and I cannot possibly show any feelings whatsoever.
Well,
like, pursue a relationship, flirt with them, like, get to know them, like, do something romantic. Don't just fucking be a silent fucking dickhead.
Well, the other thing Shinra that
get off the pot.
Yeah, the other thing that I have to point out about that is like I said, there's different levels of detail, and which I think is kind of weird, and I don't want to be like the whole, well, actually, you have to read this to get all the detail, because I don't want to be that guy. And the light novel is a pain in the ass to read because it's not professionally translated. And I read it because I was curious, and it's actually interesting because it implies that Makoto and Tomei and Miho's forms. Makoto actually thinks to himself, gee, I must have a type, because their forms must be formed because he must have like an older woman type because of their forms. He actually thinks that to himself. And I'm like, well, fuck, that should actually be in the fucking manga. That'd actually be interesting if he says that out loud or something. That would give his character some interesting spice or something.
Yeah, there. Like I said, I only read like the first, you know, was it 2-3 volumes. So there, I noticed that a couple of times, but it wasn't very prevalent compared to, you know, everything else with you know, the powers, like him being, because of these blessings he's got from the two gods, he's just literally, he walks into this human town and they
try to kill him.
Like how, well, yeah, because they can all sense basically his, you know, if he was Highlander, this dude has like the biggest quickening ever.
He walks in and it looks like it looks like an army of demon lords walking in.
Yeah. So they chase him away. And then, I mean, there was that cute thing where, you know, he's got to wear like a mask and he's got to create like all this power dampening gear to like, you know, make him, his aura be no stronger than an ordinary human. And they create this whole, I do like how, is it Tomei or Tomo?
Tomei.
Okay, Tomei and Mio. And various times throughout what I read, I like the part how they just kind of leap in. Oh, see, it works like this because this is what happened to him. Like how they come up with this false identity of him being like this scarred and cursed heir to a merchant family. And that explains why he's dressed the way he is and why he wears the mask and he can't speak. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. That's kind of like somewhat reminiscent of like Zorro. And, you know, like specifically I found on YouTube recently, somebody started posting episodes of the old black and white Zorro series that Disney made in the 50s. And there's stuff in there like how Don Diego chooses, you know, he's this badass sword guy or like fencing master, but he just pretends to be like this artistic dandy to not let anyone suspect that he's the, you know, he's the fox. And he has Bernardo, his mute servant, who also pretends to be deaf as well, so people talk all kinds of mad shit around him and he just reports back to Don Diego, who then uses it to, you know, futz with the police. So I like that part of this story, and like that whole thing where they go into the town and they're just trying to, you know, get gear, and they just, he can't help but succeed. And again, I like that, but, you know, because I'm old and nothing good lasts forever, I'm afraid of what's going to happen if this inevitably comes crashing down on Makoto's head.
Oh, something really bad is going to happen soon, is all okay. I have to say. And like I said, there's going to be a really dark moment soon. I don't want to spoil too much, but...
Don't spoil anything then.
Okay, well what I will say is what I do like is the anime, if you want to watch the anime, just be prepared because they do condense and skip a lot of stuff that the manga has. And what I do like is the anime does make a callback. And as you can tell, Tomei has a love affair with Makoto's memories of watching samurai dramas.
Yeah.
And one of the end credit songs of the anime is actually from an old samurai drama, an old samurai drama called Mito Komon. And Mito Komon was an old samurai drama about an old shogun who poses as a merchant with two retainers who travels from town to town, and what happens is they look and see injustice, and two retainers fight the bad guys, and the shogun posing as the merchant reveals who he is, and decides on the on what the justice is to be served, and the two retainers serve out the justice. Sound familiar?
A little bit, yeah.
So it's a little bit of a joke that they did to have that as the outro song in the anime. Yeah.
So I definitely want to get back into this because I really did enjoy the story, even though, like I said, the gripes with all this constant world building. But I guess eventually other stuff is going to happen. This going on to the second one, again, a lot of world building, a lot of exposition, a lot of can't help but succeed over the first two volumes was that time that I got reincarnated as a slime.
This is another one that's based off of a light novel, I guess I have to say.
Yeah, novel series, light novel, follows pretty concurrently. Although there wasn't as much of a gap between the anime adaptation and the beginning novel series. This is the novel series started in 2013. The anime came about in, I just rolled right by it here, 2018.
Now, I got a funny story about this because a couple of weeks ago, I was watching Moonlit Fantasy with Red. I wanted to show Red it, and first episode of Moonlit Fantasy had the scene where the moon god Tsukuyomi basically said to Makoto, "Don't worry, I'm gonna delete all your porn." And Makoto says, "Thank you. You really are a god." And Red said to me, "Slime did it better."
Yeah, because I didn't think about that, like, because I'd seen the first like 3 or 4 episodes of the Slime anime adaptation before I read the manga, and I noticed that while reading Moonlight Fantasy, where Makoto was like, "Can you?" and the god's like, the very pretty god is like, "Yeah, no, I got rid of all that incriminating shit for you." He was like, "Oh, you truly are a deity," and that's the same thing happened here. Now, the basic story in this, folks, if you haven't read the manga or seen the anime yet, is this Mikami's this 30-something-year-old salaryman living in Tokyo, doesn't have any emotional attachment. He's got some friends. He's got some family. He's got his job. He indulges in his hobbies. And this one day, he's going to meet his friend of his who is going to introduce him to his, you know, fiance. And in the midst of this crazy man starts running down the street with a knife, and it looks like he's going to impale Mikami's friend. He jumps and pushes him out of the way, and he gets this, you know, speared in the back by this knife. And as he's succumbing to his injuries, he tells his friend to delete my hard drive, power drill the hard drive, throw it in the tub, get rid of the evidence. And this is all at the same time, this, it's like the computer on Star Trek. He starts saying all these, "Oh, it's really hot. Predator skill unlocked. Heat resistance skill unlocked." All this stuff unlocked, and he gets, I forget the actual choice of the words, but when he dies, his soul is, he's reincarnated into this fantasy world, which kind of, the best, it works kind of on video game logic in terms of how everything grows and evolves. And the best analogy I can, or example, is it's kind of like the Scott Pilgrim universe, where, you know, just everything kind of works on this video game logic. It's like not out of the ordinary, where you punch somebody and that person explodes into like $2.37 worth of change. So he's trapped in this cave, and he starts eating all these minerals and these rocks and these plants.
And he's a slime. You forgot to mention he's a slime.
It's a big roly-poly ball of slime. It's got these two kind of like eyebrow-type marks on it to indicate, you know, where his face more or less is. He runs across this big dragon that he names Tempest, and he absorbs. Like, bear in mind, Mikami, who eventually takes the name Rimuru, once he's in this world as the slime, is about the size of like a beach ball, let's say, or really like a decent sized watermelon. And it's because he has this predator skill, which is, I have never before seen an aspect of an anime that the first thing that popped in my head was OP, because the predator skill that Rimuru has is OP as fuck. This beach ball expands like the fucking blob, and I mean the blob from the 1980s version of the film, and swallows this dragon, which now just is content to live in the stomach of this slime, and he can use a shape-shifting or mimicry ability to like bring the dragon out or use some aspect of its power. And that, I thought, and that is only slightly topped by, in sheer what the fuckness, by how Rimuru discovers how to swim. Because slimes don't have any bones. They don't float. He's sinking like a goddamn stone. But because this thing is like Kirby and Majin Buu cannot swallow shit the way Rimuru can. He sucks in all this water and shoots it out like a jet to the point that he is probably going faster than a speedboat in the water. And I'm laughing the whole time reading this in my head, and I've got a dopey smile on my face because this is all just so magical. And then he gets out of there and he starts meeting all the goblins. And the thing, to speak of the video game logic, the thing that made me smile the most and just kind of chuckle, oh, what the fuck, was where the 3 days after he names all these goblins, after he rescues this one, he brings them back, all the goblins have gone from, like, these dopey, vaguely Muppet-esque looking things, and now they're all, like, well, they're still goblins, but they all look like goddamn supermodels. And it took me a minute to... How does that fucking work?
Because he named them.
And I didn't have to... Well, yeah, and they explained that very quickly, that this is how this shit works. And he had swallowed a spider, and he finds out that the goblins are being attacked by this, like, pack of wolves, and he has two different... He's got Steel Web, which he puts up in this cat's cradle-like thing so that, you know, one of these wolves try to run through it, they basically get sliced to ribbons like that... laser grid scene in the first Resident Evil movie. And then there's sticky webs where, you know, if they dodge past all that and they try to crawl through holes in, like, the meager wall defense that they have, they get stuck there because it's super sticky, like Spider-Man's webs. And Rimuru didn't intend to do this, but he spits out some water which fucking decapitates the leader of the pack. And then he does the naming thing and all the wolves, and they all evolve to their ultimate forms. And now they're all, was it storm wolves, where they grow big and they got all the big bushy fur like you would think in an anime wolf. And they all have like this unicorn horn. And Ranga is like the son of the former alpha. Now he's leader of the pack and is Rimuru's mount. And it's just all this crazy shit kept piling on top of where they go and they need a craftsman. So they go to this dwarven city in the mountain. And I love how they met, was it Kaijin, who's like the dwarf craftsman, right? He's got this contract to make like 20 magic swords. And they explain it all in there, and it would take too long for me to explain it here. But by eating all this, it turns out that Rimuru would eat all this magic steel, like unprocessed magic ore in the cave where he first woke up. He does that, then he swallows the regular swords that Kaijin had made and uses his mimicry ability to copy the one magic sword he's made. He's not going to make the deadline, and he just uses that to, like, make all the regular swords he swallowed into the magic swords they need in fulfilling this contract, because the guy that ordered the contract is this douche who is, like, just trying to screw Kaijin over. And then when that guy shows up at the pub later and he can, you know, slimes are demons, and he throws this drink on him and he gets his ass worked. But then everyone else is put on trial, and this asshole shows up in court with like a fake scar and all these bandages on his head because he's like, fuck you, I'm better than you are. And he gets screwed by the end because the king, in probably the most boss level move, exiles Kaijin and Rimuru and that whole party from the city. You're never allowed to return. But at the same time, he knows that this douche was being a douche. So he's like, tell me why. Like, why did you do this? And when the guy can't bring himself to admit that he was being a shit heel, he's never allowed inside the palace again, which basically puts like a cap on how much prestige this guy can get. So overall, the story, like I said, it's a lot of exposition dump, but I think it was done a lot. It's more in line with how they did it with Shield Hero than in Moonlit Fantasy. And just how many people step to Rimuru is like, well, you're just a sly. It was like, oh, God, I'm being swallowed alive. I love at how the characters, that all the different characters Rimuru meets in his travels, and they not all of them like join his little conclave that he's building, but you know, he's like, look, you guys are cool, let me help you out, give you like some new armor, some new gear. And so he got like this party adventures that go off after he meets like the one that, you know, your promised one. Like he meets they go to the bar and there's like these female elves, and honestly I wanted to be Rimuru in that scene where he's just sitting there and there's that one, shall we say, top heavy chick.
Yes.
Who's just sitting there resting Laverne and Shirley on top of Rimuru's head, and you can't see the shit-eating grin on his face, but you know he has a shit-eating grin in his face, because all these like Baywatch-esque elven serving ladies are just fawning over him. It's like, oh, he's so cute. And he gets this prophecy. He's like, you're, you know, vague as prophecies are, and they meet this with that adventuring party, you meet this woman that was a Chizu, who turns out to be like, you know, his Rimuru's promised one. But by the end of that story, you find out that and one of the only really disturbing panel in the that I read so far in the manga, where this demon lord comes in from behind her, you hear this sound effect, and I don't know what it was that made that sound effect, but it is not a very nice or comfortable looking position. And it turns out that Shizu, who's become friends with the party and become friends with Rimuru, and now she's got this powerful fire fairy, and Ifrit.
Yes.
Ifrit trapped in her, who starts taking over and is going to like lay waste to everybody. And by the end of it, Rimuru does what Rimuru does, and he swallows Ifrit, and now Tempest has a neighbor in the stomach zone, or not Phantom Zone, and he has separated Ifrit from Shizu, but then she's been in this world, because she's from Japan as well, and she's been in this world for decades, and it's really sad. Like, I felt legitimately sad.
Did you cry?
Reading those... I didn't cry.
I cried.
But it's really sad. And then we go back to the what the fuck, where everyone goes in to talk to Rimuru like the next day, and he's used his mimicry ability to absorb Shizu, and now he's got the loli form. And I was like, good, because I wasn't prepared for any more emotional catastrophes today. And that's basically where I left it with that manga. I mean, all in all, again, solid art. Like I said, there was the exposition and all the world building, but it was a little more varied, and it was laid out a little bit more, a little more neatly. So I definitely want to get back into this one, and I got to get back to the anime, because I really like the anime too. Production wise, the voice work and all that. But like with these first few stories, man, like, what did you like? I wonder what you guys liked, you know, about these first few, first couple of volumes that I've read.
Well, with which one, which one do you want to start with?
Well, the first volume, like,
Of Moonlit or Slime?
Oh, no, I'm talking just about Slime.
Slime? Okay. I gotta be honest, the humor of this guy just got fucking stabbed, and the first thing he's worried about is his porn. That got me. The fact that, okay, he's a slime, he can't even see, and he's trying to figure out how this world works, and Vildora is a great character. I love Vildora. He's, the dragon. I'm actually sad that you're not going to see much of him for a while. Because he's great. He's great. I got my answer to you. I actually really like the nation building stuff that Slime gets into. I think nation building in an isekai can be really fun if done right, if done without the minutiae. Mm-hmm. Because It's sort of like here's someone from our world that's thrown into like a swords and sorcery fantasy world, and they're trying to build like a level of comfort again. And that can be interesting as long as you don't go into the fucking minutiae or do something retarded autistic with it. So it's kind of fun to see that. It's kind of fun to see a story where you have someone trying to like build up a world and or doesn't even understand how the world works. Like Rimura is like naming people because like I'm not just going to call you you. I'm going to give you a name. It doesn't realize the implications of naming everybody. So Rimura names everybody and fucking wipes himself out for 3 days, and then everyone's over powered up, and it's like he doesn't stop because that's just who he is. It's like so it's kind of funny. Like every time Rimura like meets a new like species, he just names them all. And that doesn't stop. That becomes a thing. That becomes a running theme. And that's kind of awesome. And it like I said, every time it happens, he wipes himself out doing it. And what's really weird is like you'll learn this later on, is other people use names as a way to control people, as a way to broker favors, but Rimura does it because he just wants to like call somebody their name. He wants to communicate. Rimmer does it as a way to communicate. He doesn't want to do it as a way to hold something over somebody.
So I'll ask you, Red, over these first two volumes, like you read the manga as well, right? Okay, over the first two volumes, like what's some of the stuff that you liked in here?
How far did you get?
To the end of where Shizu dies and Rimuru gets his loli form.
Slime is a long burn. Like, it's good through the whole thing. And, like, it's one of the hard things to do in writing is constantly keep something good and keep people interesting. But it gets better and better and better and builds up. In my opinion, the first two volumes are not enough to actually fucking read. You gotta read more. There's a lot of mysteries in Slime and a lot of stuff.
I mean, I definitely want to continue reading this series because I very much enjoyed it. One thing I do have to go back and reread just because pretty busy in the last week, so I didn't read absolutely everything in these first two volumes. Like I kind of skipped over Veldora's slime observation journal, like the prose bits that were in these first two volumes. I'm gonna have to go back and read those because, it's like there's a mother. Where's the motherfucking dragon at? And as Ben was saying, I do like the world building here and some aspects of it that it just kind of made me chuckle and like, oh God, how is this gonna work? Like where Rimuru starts naming the goblins and he puts this like, okay, you're in charge of, leading the town and you're in charge of building shit, and the builder goblin is like, cool, I can do that. How do I do that? And just some that I hadn't really noticed reading it until then that, they only had like their very base skills and they're kind of living in this abject poverty. So Rimuru, like with the adventuring team that he gives like new gear to after the conclusion of the Shizu story there, he starts becoming a leader and teaching or showing, some of the people like, this is how you do this, and like he's actually becoming a proper leader a little bit more than like Makoto, because Makoto was just kind of just do it, throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, I think. But yeah, I'm definitely going to keep rereading this, and the next time I get to a volume, I'm going to read Veldora's journal bits because, I really did that. And you get into the third one, and this is the one I put off for the longest time. I've watched a bunch of the anime. It's One Punch Man. Now, the reason I put this off for the longest time, both the anime and the manga, is this is. When it first came out and a bunch of my friends were getting into it, either through the sub or the dub, and you know, the translated manga, it was very much like the movie Titanic and Game of Thrones, in that everybody and their sister was telling me to check this shit out. And if there is one trigger that you know I have, even though my co-hosts know about, well, a dozen of them at this point in our lives,
it's overhyped.
I'm not taking that bait, Ben.
Okay.
is when a lot of people all at once, it seems, tells me, you got to check this out. And it's like, I will check it out when I'm good and goddamn ready. And I wish I hadn't had that attitude with One Punch Man, because I only read the first couple of volumes. Very much enjoyed everything I read. It's about where I got to from what I read in there is probably only the first three or four or five episodes of the anime, which I very much enjoyed. So basically, if you haven't heard of One Punch Man, you need to fix that, folks, because if you like superhero comics, I can guarantee you would like this. Basically, it's on this world where there's like a, they say it's on a supercon. It's basically Pangea, where there are heroes and villains. And in City Z, there is this guy named Saitama who is a hero for fun. He does, 100 push-ups, 100 crunches. 100 pull-ups or sit-ups?
Sit-ups.
He does 100 sit-ups, and he runs 10 miles every day. He does this every day over the course of 3 years. So now he has gained a power to the point where he can, there is nobody he's come up against that he cannot absolutely annihilate with one punch. Like, you would think one of the first villains he shows up is Vaccine Man, who basically looks like a giant purple Piccolo. And if you don't think he doesn't look like Piccolo, you're blind. And this guy is basically an aspect of the world. He is a living concept created from by the will of Mother Earth, of Gaia herself. And Saitama blasts this guy like a mosquito hitting a windshield. One punch. Like, he can one-shot literally anybody. And then he fights, like, the two brothers. Was it Biceps King and his smart brother who gave him, like, the super steroid? And he's grown to the size of a kaiju. And, again, one punch. The first story I read in this thing is the one, it was the dream sequence where Saitama is woken up by the mole people attacking. But he isn't woken up right away because... And he's hearing the sound, and I guess his subconscious feeds him this dream of, like, these super powerful mole people who aren't easily taken out by a punch from him. And he's like, finally, a proper challenge. And he's enjoying it. He's like, this is the greatest day ever. And then his alarm clock goes off, and he just wakes up with this blank look. He's like, oh, son of a bitch.
It's not that they're not taken out by one punch. They're taken out by one punch, but there's so many of them, it's an actual challenge, is what he dreams.
Yeah. But they're literally, like, they hit him, and he's like, okay, let's go. And it takes him a bit. And then when he pops outside, and he annihilates one, and the rest of them, like, bitch out and go back down their hole to subterranean, just leave the white flag, just says, oh, we quit. You know, it gets really good. Again, as Ben has mentioned this character into off camera before, I love whenever a Moomin Rider shows up.
Yes.
Who's the Lawless Cyclists, who is this guy, is very much inspired by, in some aspects, of Kamen Rider. And because you find out no one knows who Saitama is because he's not registered with the Hero organization. Everyone just ends up granting Moomin Rider the accolades, especially like with the... I think it's with Mosquito Queen or Insect Queen shows up, which again, my mind started to wonder because apparently I have a kink for insect women. And it's also the fault of the artist because they keep drawing her like that.
That's gross, man.
I am who I am and I make no apologies for that. But that's also where we meet the best boy in One Punch Man, Genos, the cyborg, who is just shy of, he's that kind of annoying hanger-on of a sidekick. It's like, think Syndrome in The Incredibles, but not nearly as annoying. Well, and he just shows up, and he's constantly begging Saitama to take him on as an apprentice and teach me how to be a hero, how to be strong like you.
Well, Genos is on paper supposed to be the hero, because Genos looks cool, has the tragic backstory, has the awesome looking equipment, has like the awesome scientist doctor who gives him the equipment and like passes all the scores with 100% and all that. And like everyone thinks he's going to be the next big hero, but Genos knows what's going on. Genos knows Saitama is the real hero. That's, you know, that's the joke. And Genos is the one that gets absolutely wrecked every fight.
But he keeps coming back. And no, I love Genos. I love I loved his reaction where, because you don't get Saitama's origin story until like the second adventure that Genos and Saitama go, where they go to face House of Evolution, which is like this mad scientist who's like trying to create like, you know, the perfect being, and he's created all these animal villains like a cyborg ape and beast kings, like this giant berserker lion man, and Saitama and Genos just wreck their shit, and we finally they come to Carnage Kabuto, which, okay, his first form where he literally looks like Brock Lesnar cosplaying as a giant beetle is kind of dumb, but when he hulks out and assumes his combat form, I love that. I just love the name Carnage Kabuto. I wish that was like an actual Sentai supervillain. And he's like, how are you this strong? Because he's got like this danger sense that tells him that Saitama is going to wreck his shit. And Genos is like, yes, tell us the story of how you're so strong. And he tells him about, you know, the 100 sit-ups, the 100 crunches, the 100 push-ups, the running 10 miles. And Genos is, bullshit. That's no way. That's bullshit. And then this pisses off Kabuto, who assumes his second form, and then he gets his shit wrecked. And I fucking love that. And that's when Genos drops the bomb on Saitama. He's like, look, you got to be registered with the Hero Association, otherwise no one's going to know where they are and just think you're some goof that has no hair. So he's like, okay, let's go sign up, and I will take you on as apprentice for real. And Genos is like, bet, and off they go, and that's about where I left it. I loved this first one, like, these first two volumes, like, again, this, maybe it's because it's so close to comic book fiction that it got to me, you know, hooked me a little bit more. But the world building overall, I think, is, you know, it's just right so far. You know, more is coming. You get that sense. You know, you get the backstory of Genos, of how there was this crazy combat cyborg that, you know, something went wrong inside of him and was like wrecking all this, killed his family, and he was barely hanging on, and the scientist that gives him all his awesome cyborg gear was, he was a professor for justice who was trying to track down and stop this guy, and he begged him to, you know, give me the power to attack this. And overall, it's just, I love this, and I know from what I've heard from other friends, like, it gets darker, it gets a lot more intense, you know, you get a little bit into the, you know, like, bureaucracy of the Hero Organization, or Hero Association, sorry. But overall, like, I love it, and it's like the art, the designs of the characters, like I said, it's not like I was really like simping for the Insect Queen, right? I'm just saying, she looked fine. She looked real fine. But also, like, the ideas, the details, like, when you look at Vaccine Man, like I said, he looks like a purple Piccolo, and I say purple because I read black and white manga, but I've seen the anime when he shows up. He's this giant, looks like a walking mass of, like, an oil slick or something like that. And, you know, just, like, how the shading was done and how the different, you know, bumps and bubbles and everything, the same thing with, like, Biceps King, where you see this giant overly muscled kaiju walking around, where he's got, like, you know, all the skins peeled off from his head, so he looks like he's just got some kind of bone helmet, and you got all these, like, ribs and veins and bony protrusions kind of just barely being held back by his skin. And you know he's still intelligent, but because he's so big and so strong, his brain doesn't move as fast as the rest of his body, so when his brother's screaming at him to crush that guy in his shoulder...
Oh, God, that was a great moment.
Oh, no, I loved it. I laughed out loud reading that. And I laughed out loud when I saw the thing, too, where he's like, okay, crush guy on my shoulder, and he goes up and he swats his brother, and he's like, brother, no! And he tries wrecking Saitama's shit, and Saitama does what Saitama does. Wrecks his shit in return. So, yeah, it's overall, I love these first two. Now, I can't wait to get into the rest of this series. More so than Slime, and definitely more so than Moonlit Fantasy. I want to keep going. I will keep going with this.
Sure thing.
I also want to get back to the anime, because that was really good too. And also, like, how do you guys feel about One Punch Man?
It's one of my favorites, actually. It's one of those series that really drew me to it. The art really grabbed me, and yes, I know this isn't the original art. I know about the original webcomic. The story really grabbed me too. I love the storytelling is earnest, but at the same time, kind of, I don't know what the right word is, kind of flippant at the same time as earnest. It's
definitely fluid.
Yes. The characters, I love all the characters. Every character has its moment, has their moment to shine. Each character has their own voice, and it's definitely something I love reading. Red?
Well, for me, there's something rare about One Punch Man, and that is a comic that actually made me laugh out loud while reading it. There's only two comics that I've ever done then. That's One Punch Man and Ranma 1/2. Like, I remember being a kid and watching or reading Ranma 1/2, and I was on a public bus, and all of a sudden I'd start cracking up. It's fucking funny. And same thing with One Punch Man. To me, that's a big accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, because it's how it feels. Like how it plays with the conventions of what we know as of superhero comics and the genre, and how, like, you know, Saitama is this, you know, unstoppable force, and he will literally push everyone's shit in, but he's more concerned about getting to bargain day at the grocery store.
Yes,
you know, stuff like that, which is something that also made me laugh out loud, like where he's fighting Carnage Kabuto. And he realizes, wait, it's Saturday. That means I'm missing the specials. No! Stuff like that. Yeah, it's... I love it, and I do want to keep going with it. Like, there's no reason why I wouldn't keep going with this. And I would out of the three, if you couldn't tell already, I'm definitely recommending One Punch Man. I'm definitely recommending that time I got reincarnated as a slime. And Moonlit Fantasy, I'm going to give it a recommend, but with the caveat that only if you're a big isekai buff. Because I think if you're just like a normal manga or normal manga reader, or you're a comic book fan like me and you want to get into it, you want to try something, I think it's not that it's dense, but it's a little much. So it's a light recommend on that, but it's a hard recommend on the other two.
Are you not an isekai guy?
Well, I love isekai, but I think it's a little too much isekai all over on that. Also, I've been watching a lot of isekai lately. Like, I've been neglecting my Gundam and my... I've been working my way through the original Gundam series, and then if I take a break from that, then I go over and I start watching Iron-Blooded Orphans, which I've actually been very much enjoying that as well.
I've never heard of Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Well, it's a Gundam series. I think it's in one of the alternate timelines where it focuses on a group of basically child soldiers who decide to, you know, it's overly simplifying the story, but they kind of strike out in their own form, their own private military corporation, and, you know, go off and do what Gundam series do.
Sounds awful.
It's pretty good, but, you know, not everyone likes it, and that's fair.
All right. Well, anyways, it sounds like we've reached the end of this list right now, so any final thoughts, guys?
If I would say what, if anything I've learned from this, don't knock on manga just because it's not what you're used to reading. Like, you know, look at the titles, get some descriptions from your friends or online, you know, grab a volume and give it a chance. I mean, you're not going to lose anything other than some time, and you might find that you have a whole other avenue to enjoy of entertainment.
All right, well, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.
All right.